to the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for sticking around on this Thursday morning. We do appreciate you listening. Text line, if we have time permitting, 251-343-0106. Quick programming note. No, you just get me for one day this week, filling in for myself on my radio show. But tomorrow, one and only Terry Latham, former chairman of the Alabama Republican Party. I think now she's sort of the spokeswoman for the Mobile County Republican Party. But you ought to be able to look forward to that. Really big on school choice, a bunch of other things. You'll get to hear from her tomorrow. So please make sure you tune in. And I'll be back on Monday, hopefully. I don't see any reason why I wouldn't. So look forward to me being back on Monday. But joining us now, he is running for the 2nd Congressional District Republican nomination, a friend of the program, former State Senator Dick Brubaker. Senator, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Jeff. I'm doing great. It's a beautiful day. Been out campaigning all morning, going to campaign all night, and see if we can bring this thing home.
Well, how are you feeling coming out of last Tuesday? We haven't really talked since then.
It's hard to.
Yeah.
I mean, we carried 8 of 13 counties, 2 out of 3 media markets, got 1,200 more votes than our own projections. So, we actually, from our we came in higher than our internal polling. So it's, I thought we did great.
Yeah, I mean
my opponent spent over $300,000 going negative on me in Montgomery County, and I still got 67% of the vote. It's hard to feel bad about that, especially with 7 candidates running.
Well, yeah, crowded field and whatnot. And looking at this, I mean, it's a sprint, right? A sprint to a primary runoff day. You just kind of roll with it like you did during the campaign, don't you?
Yeah, you just keep doing what you were doing. Some states only have 10 days between their Super Tuesday and then their runoff. I think 6 weeks may be a little much, just because it makes it. For people in contested races in competitive districts, it means, like, in this race, we're just spending a lot more money campaigning against other Republicans when we need to be campaigning against Democrats. So I think Alabama really stretches the process out. That's the way we've always done it, and I'm okay with continuing to do it that way, but it would just, in this day and age, I'm not so sure it makes sense, especially if you have a contested general election.
Well,
a competitive general.
Senator, the Tuesday primary last week, you add up all the Republicans, you add up all the Democrats. I mean, this is definitely a winnable seat, isn't it?
Well, it is if I'm the nominee, sure. I mean, you're going to have someone with a record to where they can get that. The independents that are left, and that the Democrats are going to have a hard time painting as an old South Confederate, the people that African Americans need to be afraid of being in office. And I think I'm that guy. But it is very winnable for a Republican. But the issue is, Republicans turned out as many voters as Democrats did, but the overall turnout on Super Tuesday was 22%. That's low.
Well, this would be the wild card, though, that gambling vote. You don't need that on the ballot. But if you don't have that on the ballot, I mean, you got Trump on the ballot. That's going to help it out, isn't it?
It should. We certainly hope so. And in this runoff in the second district, whoever turns out their voters is going to win because when the general election comes, if Republicans don't hold the 2nd congressional district, it'll be because the Democrats did a better job of getting their vote out. And that's all it's going to boil down to, because it's the as far as just the, you look at the voting trends, I mean, this district It started off saying it was D plus four. You know, frankly, I think it's dead even.
I think within the margin of error of it being, I mean, like, we're talking like a couple hundred votes. Now, you competitive races on both sides. I think November, you look at it, I mean, you look at the Chairman Wall was telling me this, that he thinks for the Republican to win, they think you focus on the top of the ticket and make it a Trump-Biden, and then hopefully in the second district that people just mark Republican or straight R or whatever. That's the approach he thinks will get whoever it is, you or Caroline Dobson, across the finish line.
Well, you know, that's the approach we've generally taken. But on the other hand, I mean, how many competitive congressional districts did we have when we had this 2 years ago? Out of all of our seats, how many of them were really competitive? And the answer is none. So it's kind of a different ball game in the second.
Well, the other thing I think you capitalize on, Senator, is there's no Democrat Party infrastructure. They are really just, I mean, there's dissension in the ranks. There's clearly a schism here. And, you know, I don't know if you've gotten this far down the road, but, you know, a lot of national Republicans are like, I don't know about that. And they're playing off this conventional wisdom generated by, like, that inside the Beltway press, the guys who, like, make these, like, predictions and study the data or whatever. But, like, on the ground, they'd be a fool not to really invest in this race.
Oh, look, I agree. And, you know, there are the biggest donors so far on either side of the ticket is, you know, the cryptocurrency industry that has certainly committed themselves to seeing one of the Democrat candidates get elected. I don't know if you saw that financial report, but that's a big donation from one industry. But the Republicans, if they want to win this seat, they can. And if we nominate the right kind of candidate, we can beat anybody the Democrats nominate, anybody. If we talk about our issues, I mean, regular people are concerned about the border. They're concerned about inflation. The economy is softening up, and they're worried about their own savings. They're worried about their kids, and they want some. I think they want some representatives in Congress who'll take these things seriously and actually try to solve them and not just use them as a punchline.
Yeah. Well, what do you do? Where do you look at the results and you look at, I mean, I think the south part of the district, but where probably there's room for improvement. You really did outperform in your neck of the woods, it looks like to me. That's just my kind of quick analysis of it. What do you need to do down our way to get those numbers up a little?
Well, the difference between me and my opponent in Mobile County was 111 votes. But what I think that we need to, I think Mobilians have more at stake in, especially given the way District 1 turned out, that they have probably more at stake in the District 2 race than they've ever had before. And I think they want a congressman who will commit to getting Mobile the economic infrastructure that it's got to have if it's going to continue to grow. I mean, we've got the improvements to the port, the widening of the ship channel, the Bayway Bridge, all of those things are unique to Mobile. But on the other hand, especially when you talk about improvements to the port, you know, Montgomery spent $110 million on a container port on the river, you know, in Montgomery, and they're building another one in Decatur. And those container facilities in Montgomery and Decatur aren't going to be worth very much if we can't get the containers out of Mobile. So a lot of this helps the whole district, I mean, the whole state. And I think that, you know, I've talked to the Mobile Chamber and you know, Joe Bonner over at USA. And what I keep hearing over and over again is that we need a congressman who's actually going to respond to the unique needs that we've got in Mobile. I mean, let's face it, a lot of coastal issues that affect that part of the state that don't affect anywhere else. I mean, it's nothing else. Just flood insurance is a huge issue in the Mobile area. And, you know, if you talk about that north of Saraland, people don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, that's something to be said about that. You know this, and I guess you're coming to realize it. You look at, like, even AL1, how tribal the state is, and they try to engineer these districts, and it's really what it looks like to me, and for you even, is probably like running three congressional races, going all the way to Phoenix City and into that. But you come south, I mean, you go Montgomery and then Mobile. I mean, you're not talking about, like, say it used to be, where the congressman here would talk about, like you said, the port, they talk about Austell, they talk about Airbus or whatever, and the importance of all that, the cancer center. You gotta, like, have all of that in your back pocket, and you gotta have the other issues, the other parts of the district.
Well, yeah, and you've got an economic axis between, I mean, let's put it this way, anything that, especially when it comes to the port, anything that makes the port more efficient, you're not going to have people in Montgomery opposing it, because all of that economic activity comes right up the interstate through Montgomery. Where it gets harder to represent as a congressman is when you branch out east and west. You know, I mean, where does Phoenix City come into this conversation? And you follow. And, you know, because they've got a whole different set of issues that have nothing to do with container ports. But I think all of them expect to have a congressman that'll take their phone calls and try to help them where it's appropriate. And I'll be honest with you, you know, I don't really hold to the no earmarks mentality, because, you know, yes, it was out of hand and needs to be reined in some, but that doesn't mean you quit calling balls and strikes. I mean, I think we're smart enough to differentiate between earmarks that are proper roles for the federal government, like infrastructure, which has always been a federal state partnership, and that includes the Bayway Bridge, and earmarks that are not. I don't think it makes a whole lot of sense to argue that a project like Bayway should solely be a state and county issue. I mean, every other major interstate project's always been a state federal match. I don't see why this one would be any different.
Well, the thing about earmarks, Senator, and this is, you know, I know there's like a kind of a war on earmarks, and maybe it's the Congress brought it on itself, but I mean, constitutionally, you still have the power to purse string. And I don't think people are necessarily cool with the bureaucracy making this. At least here, they feel like they have some skin in the game with the House and the Senate and their representative. And if you don't like them bringing home the bacon, you think it's all pork, just don't vote them back in.
Well, and also, you know, when it comes to the, you know, saying no earmarks, you know, that might make sense if let's say that there's $1 million for a project that was going to go to, you know, some sort of infrastructure in, I don't know, in Chickasaw. And if you turn it down, if the money wasn't going to be spent anywhere, you might could make a case saying, you know, we're reining the budget in. That's $1 million less that's going to be spent. But that's not how it works. If you turn down funding for your state, it's still going to be spent somewhere. It's just going to be spent in California instead of in Mobile or Montgomery.
Well, you know, yeah, go ahead.
So, I mean, you, I think you get the point. I mean, I think we just got to call balls and strikes, and it's not like we, you know, we did it for a long, long time. We just quit doing it about the time Obama got into office and everything became transactional, you know, this for you and this for me and anything goes. And that's where we got into trouble.
Well, it's this, Senator. It is, you know, we got to get spending and you know, fiscal responsibility. Every little bit matters, where we spend and where we don't. But like the big picture is our debt's a deficit. It's the entitlement spending, right? I mean, that's where the fundamental flaw is with the American, you know, assets and you know, the problems there with the balance sheet and the liabilities. It's getting a handle on this entitlement spending and these unfunded liabilities that the government doesn't really have an answer for. They're just borrowing the money. And that's the conversation that needs to be had, not like, oh, where we spent money on a some kind of infrastructure project earmarked for your district.
Well, yeah, and you know, I think it's the problem is it's twofold. I mean, at some point, the government's going to have to restore some discipline. I mean, all of the programs that started during COVID, you don't hear a whole lot of congressmen real anxious to get rid of them. And when they started talking about PPE loans, remember that, right? Sort of a year or two into COVID, they were PPE loans. Well, it wasn't long before they turned into PPE grants. And, you know, you just can't endlessly hand people money and separate it from work and not expect what we have now, you know, namely inflation. I mean, you've got the Democrats pushing for new taxes in almost every area of the economy. And they seem to believe that by restricting economic growth through aggressive taxation, that they're going to make things better. They're not going to make things better. They're going to make things worse. And the only way to, as Reagan proved, you want to balance the budget, you need to cut taxes, increase economic activity, and the government revenue will go up. And, you know, it happened under Kennedy, it happened under Reagan, it could happen under President Trump when he gets elected next time. But you're going to have to cut taxes, and especially taxes on personal wealth. I mean, I know Democrats don't like to hear that, but that's just the truth. You need to let people keep more of their money. And through the normal taxation process, the feds will end up with more money than they have right now.
Senator, got to leave it there, but folks want to find out more about your campaign. How can they do so?
Hey, brewbakerforcongress.com.
I'll check that out. Senator,
or you can call me.
Oh, go ahead.
334-399-5493. Call me anytime.
I'll check that out. Former State Senator Dick Brubaker now running for the 2nd Congressional District. We're right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.